A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
Or did I forget to carry the one? No, there are 31 games left. That works. Okay. I can still do math. I promise.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with the guys at Obstructed View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and enjoy talking baseball and, of course, 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Hello, this is Ken. With me are Skip and Jeff and Adam from Obstructive View and our new friend Nate. We are just after ESPN Sunday Night Baseball and the Yankees finally won. We don't care about the Yankees so much because the Cubs just finished a sweep of the Anaheim Angels. Or are they the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim? I can't keep track anymore. They're nowhere near Los Angeles. They're like part of the major metro area. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us today. I hope that everybody had a good time watching the sweep and everything else, and the Brewers finally losing. So yeah, how's everybody doing?
Fantastic. It's been a while since a nice series sweep. So that was fun.
Yeah, it hasn't always been as clean, but when you have a team who's basically got the second or third best record in the National League, one of the best records in the majors, their slump is essentially a 500 month of August so far. And I think of July as well. I'll have to look at the splits, but it hasn't been as bad as it seemed. It's just that the Brewers have been on fire until they haven't been. So yeah, I figure we can talk about that silly voodoo. Maybe look at both the division standings and the wildcard standings. Talk about the offense that's been frustrated us for weeks now. And maybe we should shout out the pitching and also certain top prospects such as Matt Shaw, Kate Horton, and even Owen Casey, who was called up since the last time we talked. And let's see what happens. What do you guys think?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Sounds good.
Woo.
Yay.
As the spring gave way to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrows.
Okay, so let's set us up. At this time, the Cubs are now 76-55. There's an off day tomorrow as of this record. So 21 games over 500 is the high water mark for the season. The Cubs are now 6.5 up on the Mets for the final wild card spot. So they have the top wild card. They're two games up on both the Dodgers and the Padres, who are tied for the West. So whoever doesn't win that division is the wild card and will most likely play the Cubs, unless the Cubs somehow make up the five games they have between them and the Milwaukee Brewers. Because if they tie the Brewers, guess who has the tiebreaker? That's right, the Chicago Cubs. So as very technically, head-to-head, the Cubs are ever so slightly better than the Brewers, and that's why they hold the tiebreaker. So how are we feeling right now about the Brewers, the standings, whatever else?
I mean, I think the Brewers have just you really have to give them credit, man. They've been on this amazing run. It's nice to see this weekend that they've dropped down to earth a little bit with losing 2 out of 3 to the Giants. They've had a little bit of trouble with their rookie pitching, this week. So they could have a little bit of leave a little bit of an opening. But, I mean, you got to give them credit. It's hard to see anybody overtaking them for the division championship and the best record in baseball.
It might be hard to imagine it happening, but Should it happen, it will not be hard to watch. I mean, just looking, it's hard to even believe that they are 4-6 in their last 10 games, because in their previous 10 games, they were 32-1. So it's nice to see them, play like humans for a week or two. And I mean, you never know, but they would have to suffer serious losses to drop. They'd have to play worse, considerably worse than 500, I think, to have anybody catch them.
Yeah, they'd have to lose some guys or something other crazy would have to happen, which I would not enjoy seeing as much as I enjoy seeing the Brewers lose. I'm not going to root for injuries for at least most players. No one on the Brewers I want to see injured. Let's put it at that.
Now, here's another question for you guys. The common refrain across possibly mostly just Cubs fans, but it's like, man, they got to be cheating somehow. But I can't really see how that would happen. It just seems like they have ridden an insane just run of luck. To this 30-5 or whatever ridiculous record they've had. They haven't had like the 26 game like record breaking win streak, but they've had a couple of 10 plus game win streaks, and that's been able to propel them. And during that time, the Cubs haven't actually been playing that bad. They just haven't been playing like basically 750 baseball or 800 or whatever the math is. They like the Brewers simply just forgot to lose for a while. And then they came into Chicago and the Cubs win 3-5. They got within 7 games because the low mark was nine games. They were 9 games behind the division. And now they're within five because of the sweep against the Angels for the Cubs and the Giants again winning the series in Milwaukee. And they could have swept if not for, one very stupid pitch or two in the opener in Milwaukee, but that's how a cookie crumbles. And at this point, I think we're just hoping that, well, just stay the course, win as many games as you can, and see what happens next. Because now there are no more head-to-heads against the Brewers. Essentially, it's there's another series against the Reds. There's one more against the Pirates. There's one more against St. Louis, and then that's it. And at this time, the Cubs have the season series against the Reds and the Pirates. They have clinched the one against the Pirates, and they should probably just win the next 3 games as well. The St. Louis, they're tied. So if they win, going away, like this is essentially, I think, their last series of the season is against the Cardinals at home. So if they can win that and make things really, really close, like if they're within 3 games by the time that series starts, it becomes a pivotal series. So like let's just see how close they can make it. Now, the cool thing about the schedule is there are essentially 5 weeks left and they're 5 games down. So that's a game a week. If they make up a game a week, they're tied, and again they have the tiebreaker and they win the division. So that's a long shot, but it is still mathematically possible, and I think that's something to be grateful for.
As you were talking, I was kind of looking up. Like, I kind of realized one kind of thing that annoys me about the Brewers is that they're kind of doing the 2024 Cubs strategy, but successfully, where they just have like a zillion, like 2 to 3 WAR guys, and like no stars, and they just keep winning. Like Sal Frelick and Bryce Turang are the WAR leaders of the team. I mean, come on.
It is mystifying that it just seemed to all come together. I mean, during that stretch, when what did they top out at? 13 wins in a row?
14.
14. It was like every inning started with two outs. Like that's when they decided, okay, we'll score now. So you get whoever they were playing, they would get the first two outs, and then it would just be a parade of walk, single, double, homer, and it would never end. But it goes to show it helps to have. I'd rather have a roster full of 2 to 3 war guys than have like a couple really good guys, a few okay guys, and then you have two just absolute holes in your batting order where rallies go to die. And there are definitely guys who look not very intimidating in the Brewers batting order, but I don't think they have anybody who is an automatic out the way that the Cubs have had over the past couple of years. So I guess there's something to that.
It's funny you mentioned the Sal Frelick's of the world. I don't know the last time in my adult life where there was a guy named Sal on a major league roster who was like leading his team or close to leading his team in any category. But we've talked for decades about the Cardinals and their magical player machine that they have with all these guys that we've never heard of before. They're just ridiculous names that just do ridiculous things, and the Newt bars, and what would you do for a Newt bar, and just all that. And that seems to transfer over to the Brewers, but it's not magic. It's just the fact that their manager has pancakes in his pants, and that matters. That has obviously made a difference. So no, it's not that. They've
You've studied
obviously.
magic extensively as I have.
Yes.
Source
Like,
of magical powers is breakfast
look,
food
the.
in your pocket.
Yeah. Yes. And also disgustingly so. But their pitching has been fantastic. I think that really they have had what they need from the hitting and the base running. Their defense has been okay. But the pitching that they've had overall, bottom line, since day one, has gotten them where they are. And this run, the run and a half that they've had, in my opinion, has been more about what they have out of their arms, and what the garbage ass little cans of corn that they get at the right times have when they've come, and what the opportune times that they've come in games. Timely hitting, lucky hitting, and also some skillful hitting occasionally, I will submit, but the arms are what has done this for their team.
I appreciate you talking about the luck because, like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it seemed like, say, as Suzuki has hit a bunch of barrels and they've all gone into a glove lately. It seems like, and that's like you look at the average and you're like, oh, say has been sucking. No, he's been hitting the tar out of the ball. They just keep finding gloves, and then he's exasperated, and then he's also getting strike zone screwed because umpires seem to hate them, but that's another story altogether. I'm glad Adam talked about the 2-3 war guys. I think the Cubs have, I'm just counting them now, there's at least 9 guys, and Saez at 1.9 off of Baseball Reference, so that's 9 guys with 1.9 war or above in the position player group. Miguel Amaya, if he hadn't hurt himself again, would probably be a little higher, but he's at 1 war. Reese McGuire, of all people, has like 0.4, and Owen Casey in his short call up has 0.2. So it's like they're getting contributions up and down. It's just that these last few weeks have had us pulling out our hair because they haven't been able to get the big hit. And Kyle Tucker's been like super slumpy until he got his few days off, and now like he's got the marine layer in Southern California, and he's starting to hit the ball in the air again. So I don't know what that's all about, but yeah, it just seemed for a while that the offense had broken. But like you said, Nate, like the Brewers have been riding the pitching for a very long time, but the reason why the Cubs have been able to hover at a 500 is because of Cubs pitching. And I think there's a good testament to what Tommy Hottovy and the front office and Craig Council have been able to do to just keep everybody as healthy and effective as possible. And every now and then, yeah, you're going to make a mistake because the offense can't score. And so, you know, say Suzuki or Shota gives up a 2-run homer, and then that's the ball game. But, you know, you can't do anything if you only score one run, right? But it's very, very nice to actually see them start scoring again, particularly against the Brewers. Like, they did just enough. And they also got like a few Brewers type hits in that series, and I thought that was kind of cool because it's like at some point the luck has to even out, and I guess it's starting to find its way back. And the cushion and the wild card, the decreased deficit in the division, all of that is giving me at least a little bit of hope.
Well, I think the other thing you have to look at when you look at the Brewers hitting is, you know, they do get a lot of sort of dink hits and stuff like that, but they also don't strike out as much, right? So they only have two guys on the roster that have struck out more than 100 times. The Cubs have five. And, you know, they spread around some of their playing time a little more than the Cubs do. So, you know, it's if Churio hadn't been injured, maybe he'd be up over 100. But still, I think when you look at the Brewers, they put the ball in play more consistently than the Cubs do. And so the Cubs early in the season, you know, they were hitting home runs a lot. And so that made up for some of the times that they didn't put the ball in play. And how many times have we seen lately where they get two guys on and no outs and they don't score, right? Or they finally get a sac fly and that's about it. So I think, you know, part of it is, you know, the way they execute with men on base, and part of that is just not striking out for the Brewers and striking out too much for the Cubs.
I would just like to throw a random shout out, all this talk of, you know, the bad vibes that were going on for Kyle Tucker and the Cubs offense in general. It was very nice of Mike Trout to take away Kyle Tucker's bad juju when he showed up in Anaheim, because I could not believe what I was seeing. Like, I normally expect on the, you know, those rare occasions when the Cubs do play the Angels, I expect Mike Trout to be hurt and for it not to matter, or for the Cubs to, you know, do one of those, you know, when Ohtani was there, one of those tungsten arm O'Doyle games where they both hit four home runs and drive in 12 runs and the Angels still lose. But I forget what it ended up being, but I think he had something like 7 strikeouts and 10 at bats, or 8 and 11, or it was just a horrendous series and he never reached base, I don't believe.
Yeah, he was 0 for 11. I'm trying to count the strikeouts, so I'm not seeing it in the game.
I think he might have walked once, but otherwise he didn't get even one hit, and he struck out a lot, including, like, I think Cade Horton had 3, Tyone had 1, and then a couple other pitchers might have had a couple. Tyone struck him out twice.
8th inning, I believe. Yeah. Today's game.
Yeah.
Keller probably got him.
Yeah, but it was nice, you know, like Kittredge had his, like, really goofy inning, but, you know, it was nice of the Cubs to score one more run than they give up, and that's how you win a game, right? So,
technically, yeah we'll
very, very minimal for the opener and the finale of the series, but that's how you win, and very nice to see a blowout in between, because we hadn't seen a blowout in a while. It's been a little bit for me because I've been busy and just all these games kind of meld together, but I feel like there was at least one would-be blowout against the Brewers before they decided to make a comeback, because that's what the Brewers do. But yeah, it was really nice to see the offense put up runs again, because there was a period where it was like twos and ones and zeros, and you're just like, is the offense broken? And I don't know that the offense was broken, but I also like we talked about this earlier in the year, we really did think that the Cubs were slump proof in the point that the lineup was so diverse that even if one guy slumped, the other guys would pick them up. And then it was at that point where, again, we had a series of very poor at bats or very poor results because you kept hitting them in the gloves. And I guess it's feels like a testament to the coaches and the players because you listen to their post games and you listen to like Ian Happ on his podcast and you listen to Craig talking about games. Like they're clearly frustrated, but they're not going to dwell on it because there are doing the math of 76 and 55. So what is that, like 31 games left? So there are 31 games left, and they are able to do something about that, right? Maybe we can do the part where we pick an opponent. Let's say the Cubs cannot overcome this division deficit. Who would you rather face? And this is now a point where they're in the driver's seat for the top wild card. They're not going to win the division, so they're going to host at least three games or two games if they sweep. Or get swept. I don't know. Hopefully they make it to the division series, but essentially they're guaranteeing themselves two home games if they clinch this top wild card. Who do you want to face in that wild card round?
I would love to have a excuse to humiliate the Mets, so that would be my vote.
I don't know that there's a right answer. I know they're in the driver's seat right now, but it's maybe bad form to highlight it, but the Phillies not having Zach Wheeler is brings them down a notch for sure in a series. So, and I think it does at some point, it's got to catch up to them in the regular season. I mean, I know Schwarber's good for two home runs a day, but I think that the outlook for them for the rest of the season, maybe someone can overtake them. I don't know. I haven't even looked at how far they are ahead of the Mets, but I don't, if of the teams that are vying for the final wild card position, they're really damn good.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? And the Phils and San Diego and LA are all one game apart, basically maybe a game and a half or so between the second best record and the first wild card or the second wild card, right? So so we're probably going to face one of those three. If you look at the standings now, the Mets would go to the third place division winner, which would be either San Diego or LA. So the only other option is, maybe Cincinnati comes up and overtakes the Mets, but they're probably still going to get be the last seed. So, I mean, I don't know. We did okay against the Dodgers. They've had a ton of injuries again. The Padres, we don't seem to do as well against, and I don't really know why. So I don't know. Whoever is the weakest limping into the off season, that's who I or the postseason, that's who I want to face.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
interesting. If you take a look at the standings, right now the bye is going to be the Brewers, who have the top record in the majors, and the Phillies, who have the second best record in the National League. So those are the byes. There is, I think Adam and I kind of joked about this in the forum, but there is a possibility that the Cubs win the Central, yet do not get a bye. But yeah, that would take like a series of very weird, fortuitous events for the Cubs, but catastrophic events in terms of like where the Dodgers or the Padres or the Phillies end up. And so at that point, the Cubs would face the last wild card, and that last wild card could potentially be one of those teams that didn't win the division or even the Brewers. And I don't know how that would work. Like, it would just be like a mind screw, but essentially, like, all those scenarios are mathematically possible, and that's why we gotta wait a little while longer before it clears itself out. But you can see, like, Arizona's kind of fading. The Giants are fading. Like, the Cubs will travel to Northern California, take on the Giants next. And even after they took the series from the Brewers, like, who knows which Giants team would show up. They did win at Wrigley earlier this year. I think at least one of the losses was a coin flip until Ryan Pressly, like, melted down in extras. But yeah, that Giants team is not the current iteration of the Giants team. So yeah, you just gotta continue to play the games. And it's just really weird speculation at this point, but I feel like there is a shot for the Cubs to win the division. They just need to come into Labor Day at Wrigley against the Braves, hopefully within four. If they can get within four by that date, I think it's more possible. It's essentially one game a week
It's
for the next
possible that
5 weeks.
it could be this gradual march toward catching the Brewers, but I think it's just as likely that there's some kind of spurt where the Cubs sweep a series and the Brewers get swept or close to it. You know, a similar series is to because the Cubs played the Brewers 5 games head to head and they gained what, 1 game? Is that what it amounted to?
Yep.
They gained two.
Was it 1.5?
I
Two.
thought they started
No, they
nine
gained
back and
one
then
because
they
Brewers won
finished
two.
seven.
The Cubs
Yeah.
won two. Those games
Yeah.
cancel out, and the Cubs won one more. They gained
Gosh.
1 game. So I
No,
say
they,
that.
yeah, you're right. You're right.
But you have that situation where it's so difficult. Like you have to absolutely dominate to make progress in a head-to-head series, which is possible. But you have this other alternative where, you know, if the Cubs sweep a 3-game series and the Brewers lose 2 out of 3, then the Cubs make up 2. So the Cubs made up more ground in this past 3-game series on the Brewers than they did when they were playing them head to head for 5 games and won the series. So that's the odd thing
Getting a
about
headache.
how baseball works is
Yep.
you know, you just get these little jumps. And if they hit the skids and they lose another series and the Cubs sweep, that's when you start to make those bigger jumps forward. So yeah, it's possible that they make it up, you know, 1 week, 1 game a week. And it's possible that they make up a big chunk and then backslide. But you know, I think when you get into the psychological game of it, if they make big progress, like if the Cubs were to get within 2 or even 1 games, I think that it would be a big challenge for the Brewers not to lose their focus in the same way that I think the Cubs lost their nerve when the Brewers made up all that headway in so little time. So that's, you know, I'm all for, yeah, slow and steady wins the race, but this race, it's going to take some big chunks, in my opinion.
Adam, I'm all about all what you just said. I think you're right. I think it's dead on. I think a lot of it is management. And I hate to give kudos to the guy with a fucking, sorry, pancake in his pocket, but I think they're in a good status right there. They believe in him. They're listening to him. He's managing everything properly up there, as is Craig. Craig, well, you know, I'll have some arguments, but look, we brought Craig down here because he had proven himself as a manager of mediocre talent or average to better talent and on a roster basis. And I think he's done most of that. I still have some questions every once in a while, which that's baseball. You're going to have that. But I'm looking at the way this team has been managed, the Cubs, with the injuries we've had in the pitching, the slumps that we've had, especially the last several weeks, month and a half. You know, Tucker seems to be rebounding great, but Casey being brought up, I mean, just all these moving pieces. And I really feel like for the first time since Joe Maddon was around and we were talking about a championship or repeating a championship, management comes into the conversation almost as much or equally as what's available on the roster or in the bullpen or under rotation. And I think that gets missed a lot in the media conversation as Cubs fans or consumers of the product that may not be done as much normally. I really the tungsten or the strength of this team, this roster, what we're looking at presently constituted, whether it's, you know, the pieces in the minor league that we keep sending back or the pieces that have come up recently, and the pieces that have been there the whole time, all season. I feel like Milwaukee has not lost a lot in Council leaving, because I don't know, he seems to have his pulse on what he needs to. And I think that's an element. You know, it's not the only element, but it's an element that needs to be talked about when we talk about where we're at for both teams right now in this division race.
Yeah, there's a reason I call it voodoo, because if you look at this empirically, there shouldn't be any reason why the Brewers should be this hot, and yet
100%.
Yeah, it happens, and you know, that's why they say you can't predict baseball, and maybe there's something to it. Maybe, you know, he's got the magic touch, or the organization itself has magic touch, or they're in that like one mystery spot that Ozzie Smith fell into in Springfield, and weird stuff happens in Milwaukee. Like, they have a really good home record, you know, so do the Cubs, by the way. But I don't know the answers. I just know that the Cubs still have one of the best records in the National League and the majors in general. And the only reason why a lot of us are freaking out is because the Brewers were so much better. And I think they are right. You know, you hear a lot of the post games, like, we're not playing that poorly. Like, we being the players who are talking in their post game. The Brewers are just on another level, and sometimes there's nothing you can do about that. So again, you win the games that you can, you do what you can control. When they played head to head, they won 7 of the 13 games, and that's all they can control. Maybe they should have won more. Maybe, like, you know, the bullpen decisions should have been made differently.
Well, there's no sure. You can't say they should have won more. Like, yeah, obviously that's the solution for every play, every team and every sport in the history of athletics. They should have won more. Yes, but like that, you can't. Winning isn't like anything that one person goes out and does. So you go out and you play and you go through the process and you do the things you got to do. But there's no, oh, we should have won. Yeah, that would have been nice. But that's not really in your control. You know, and the type of, oh yeah, I should have won more, or we should have hit more home runs, or, you know, you're competing. It's a competition. Yeah. It's still the overall gist of it is the Cubs still have the second best run differential in baseball, except for the Brewers. You know, they're trailing only the Brewers. The Brewers went on a meteoric run, and they reap the benefits of that, even if they completely fall back, regress to the mean, or even below. They have, five games is kind of a magic cushion for a reason. Like, that's a really tough a tough gap to bridge. And there again,
100%. And Adam, you're right. I'm 100% behind that. I think you're right. Regressing to the mean is what you said. I think the regression of the mean, I think there's two different sample sizes we're talking about with the Cubs. The first two and a half months of the year, even with all the effing injuries I'm trying to restrain myself, guys. I'm sorry. The injuries we've seen to the pitching staff the first 2.5 months versus and then the winning percentage and the winning series at home and splitting on the road versus whatever that garbage was that we saw out of Milwaukee the last three and a half weeks. Like the concentration, I think, is different, but it's the same. It's different sample size, but it's just like, man, the voodoo level of like baseball is weird. All of us know that. Like baseball is just, there is no game. Look, the NFL and their small sample size in games. The NBA plays way too many games. Baseball does as well, but it seems like of any sport, Major League Baseball, we see more weird stuff happen in a 3-week span in any point in the season than any other pro sport in North America. And I think we're seeing extremes of that for the Cubs and the Brewers on both sides. And the fact that they're paralleling each other, it's a tribute to what the hell is going on.
Man.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
And I do note, as we still run our Facebook page, like there are certain people who will doom and gloom and yell at the clouds and stuff when, you know, the Cubs lose, and they'll talk about effort and this and that. It's like, bro, this is their job. They're trying to win. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. You know, like you try to make a perfect pitch, and a Milwaukee Brewer would just golf it anyway. So it kind of forgets that the other team is trying to beat you, and the other team is full of players who are good enough to be on a major league roster, who will do their best to try to beat you. And at the end of the day, like, you just want to win as many of those 162 as possible, because there are no more game 163s. So now I think the Cubs are in a pretty good position. If you look at Fangraphs, they are like a 99.7% chance to make the playoffs. You don't want to take that as gospel, because those odds will change depending on how these next 31 games or so will go. But that has to make you feel pretty good. Like, one way or the other, the Cubs are going to be one of the six teams that make the postseason. Where they're seated, it remains to be seen. But based on what you've seen so far from the season series, like, you know, the Dodgers went 0-6 against the Brewers. Does that mean that they're going to get swept by the Brewers if they have to meet in a postseason series? Probably not, because as we saw in 2015, you know, the Mets didn't care that they lost the season series to the Cubs. Like, they went to the NLCS, they won, and they went to the World Series, where they probably lost to the Royals, because, you know, the Royals, it was their time. I don't know what was up with that, but it was actually a really cool World Series that year. And then next year, the Cubs, like, had their little issues, but they eventually won enough games to win the World Series, right? So it's just a matter of, let's get to the dance and figure it out later. And I think the depth that this team has built has allowed them to do that. It's been, like, it's been very interesting. You only tell people that they need to rest when they have to, when they're slumping or when they're ineffective or whatever. And then you get mad when Daniel Palencia doesn't, like, save every single game, or, you know, you get mad that the old bar can't pitch every day or whatever. And then you kind of forget that, you know, arms have a shelf life and they need to recover. and things of that nature. So I think a really good example today, like a lot of people kind of freaked out when Jameson Taillon didn't come out for the sixth. And then we found out after the game that he was suffering a little tweak in his groin. And so you realize that there is a rationale for everything that the manager and the team is doing. They just don't have to tell you right then and there because you're just a fan, right?
And I
So
think
it's
we need to take
kind
a
of.
moment to just remember that the people that you see on the street, the guys you see on television competing, the people that we run into in our lives, you never know what's going on in their groins. Just keep that in mind.
Well, that was actually very pithy.
Ouch.
And sometimes you do, but most of the time you do not know.
Adam, I care about you, and I really hope you don't know what's going on in their groins.
Especially when they're wearing gray sweatpants, right?
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Well, then you know. Then you know. Oh man, felt so
Wow,
bad. Is
this
Jamie in
podcast is
trouble?
going south
It
fast.
really took a turn.
No, this is good. This is awesome.
We
Love it.
eighth
Adam's
grade
right.
production.
Adam's right.
We had an eighth grade production of Midsummer Night's Dream, and this poor kid, Jamie Edgecombe, played bottom, and that we were rehearsing, and the girl who was like in the scene with him had to lay her head on his stomach, and he was wearing gray sweatpants, and I it was the most embarrassed I've ever felt for anyone in in all my life. Because it was just like, oh crap, we should cut. But anyway,
Adam is father of the year. That is, oh my God.
it was when I was in eighth grade. It was terrible. Oh
It's okay.
yeah
All right.
yeah
Standing at
this
attention
kid,
there.
yeah.
Well, I hope Jamie doesn't listen to our podcast, and
I
neither
hope
does
he does.
anybody who knows him.
Jamie's a White Sox fan, but we love her. She's fantastic.
He's a guy. Jamie Edgecombe was a boy.
Oh, Jamie, oh my
And we
God.
had
I just made it so much worse.
conversations. Yes. Yes.
All right,
Okay.
I'm muting myself for the rest
No,
of the
hey.
podcast. Thank
All
you.
right. I can't. Feel free to cut out this entire story. But
Oh,
like I
never.
said, for
But
most of the
we
time, you
can
don't know what's going
transition.
on in someone else's groin. Anyway, how about if there's a three-game series that the Cubs are in, who should pitch? Who are your three starting pitchers in a three-game series, regardless of opponent?
Boyd, Shota, and Cade Horton.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, that's pretty easy now. I've kind of turned from not trusting Cade Horton. I feel pretty good about him now.
Yeah. In that
Yeah,
in that order, Boyd, Shota, Cade Horton.
it might be interchangeable. It depends on the matchup. I think they might do it by matchup, but Boyd has to be one, and then I think 2A and 2B are Horton and Imanaga, not necessarily in that order. That would be it for me. And if you have like a seven game series or a five or a seven game series, pitcher number four can be Taillon, Ray, whoever, and then Brown and somebody else can probably piggyback. That's the depth that they've built, and I think that's really cool. And it looks like Cade Horton might have pitched his way into the Rookie of the Year race, even though he probably won't win. Same with Matt Shaw. Matt Shaw's been on a surge and kind of making you forget like that they traded away somebody else for Kyle Tucker, in my opinion.
I'm just hoping to forget the sideline pictures that I've seen from him the last couple of days, but we're not getting
I
into
will
that.
not
It's all
forget.
good.
No, we're not going to name that. I honestly thought that was like a make-wish kid or something. I didn't know what he looked like, but
It
anyway.
really was, to be honest.
I wish he was a Make-A-Wish kid. Because I wish he had a
Yeah,
terminal. Sorry.
exactly.
But
Yep. No, Adam, do not apologize. You're good.
well, that's okay. He plays really good defense, and he's been hitting the ball really, really well, and we can go with that. And whichever president is set to visit after the World Series, like that's out of our control, but
Yeah,
good
like
for
I know
memories.
probably most players have messed up conservative views, like to the point, like I wouldn't trust them to hold a conversation about politics, and that's no big deal. It's the letting the guy on the field that really took it.
And the thumbs up.
He's probably just some dumb kid who's really good at baseball. Like most guys I played baseball with.
I really hope so.
Put in that same category, but letting a white supremacist go on the field with a Wrigley Field 14 hoodie on,
yeah,
when he has no idea who Ernie Banks is, like, go ahead and cut him into pieces and fertilize along with him.
Adam, 100%. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you.
I guess I'm happy to say I don't have the slightest idea what you guys are talking about.
You're better off not knowing.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll tell you later. Just, I don't want to justify his existence by saying his name.
That's a very bad person. But there is a possibility that they didn't know, given who owns the team and what Adam has suggested, which is how certain a plausible very large majority of Major League Baseball players who are predominantly of the non-melanin variety view. It's very, very possible they knew exactly who he was and they did it anyway. So
if Cade Horton starts game 3 of a wild card series, he only goes 5 innings. Who do you want coming in from the bullpen in inning number 6?
They can match it up, but I think Ben Brown has earned that that trust.
So that's funny because I was just going to say not Ben Brown.
Yeah, very much no. Also,
hey, we'll do a 3-day contract with John Birdie. He can come in. It's all good.
you really want the postseason hinging on game 3, 6th inning? You're bringing in Ben Brown to decide the rest of the postseason fate.
That depends on the score. If the score is the Cubs are leading by a lot or they're down by a lot, I'd have Ben Brown save the rest of the bullpen because he can do it. And
how
we saw
a dozen runs would the Cubs have to be ahead by for you to put Ben Brown in? I'm asking the panel for everybody.
That is fair.
24, I'd be like, okay, bring in Ben.
Look, I don't like when mom and dad fight, so I'm going to let Adam and Ken handle this because I'm not getting in this.
I'm on 6 runs. It's about 12 runs for Nate Pearson or Luke Little. So Brown's ahead of them.
Yeah, they're not going on the postseason roster. You don't have to worry about that. But if it's close, they're going to play it inning by inning with matchups, and there's enough depth to do that.
My vote is Colin Ray. If it's a 3-game series, if the timing works, it's all over a week, over the course of a weekend, right? That's how the wild card series is scheduled.
And I'd have to look up the schedule, but I think it's like 3 weekdays and then the DS starts on the weekend. But I honestly don't remember. I'm pretty sure that's how it is because the regular season ends on a Sunday. There's a 1 travel day, and then the wild card series is 3 days, all at the top seat as the host. So
yeah, I'm reading that, Ken. I think according to MLB, it looks like that's what they have listed on their website. So
yeah, but I think I get you guys' trepidation about Ben Brown, but based on what I saw, he gave up a gopher ball to Joe Adell. He's strong. What you gonna do? But he was also had a 12-run lead, and he went 3 innings, saved the rest of the bullpen before the season series finale, before an off day. So that, when... In the very beginning of the season, when Colin Ray did that at the A's, like in that blowout, he saved the bullpen. If you can save the bullpen, you are valuable. And I think Ben Brown had shown that, in his bulk innings.
Yeah, I just the Bob Ip gods hate Ben Brown, so I I want to see if he does the necessary sacrifices in the off season to fix that before.
No, they just need to get the live chicken. But yeah, I think you guys are probably also right that Colin Ray gets bumped into long man. Pomeranz is no longer a long man. I think he's a one inning guy. But you know, it's interesting that he survived the roster cuts and Chris Flexen didn't, because Chris Flexen used to be that guy.
Chris Flexen, he left to go back to the North Pole as Santa's lost reindeer. Awesome. I'm proud of him. It's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I had to. Just Flexen. Like,
you know, yeah. Who else could do it? It's Assad. So they've been yo-yoing Javier Assad back and forth to try to I think this is just a bunch of roster loopholes. Because September's coming up, like you need those 15 days. You can probably like pretend IL somebody and bring Assad back up before those 15 days are up. But September 1st is like a week away. That's Labor Day. So on
don't
Labor
get
Day,
Adam
they get
started.
Extra. Yeah.
Adam and I had a conversation about this supposed pitcher here before we got on the call tonight, and Adam.
Oh, you mean Assad?
Adam? Yes. Adam brought up some great points. I am so frustrated with the. Yes, he was serviceable the last 2 years. The year before that, not so much. This year, not so much. But I just feel like, how much are we going to invest time and pitching lab time and roster space on? I don't know. I'm kind of done with Javier Assad, but Adam, you made several salient points. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think the story arc for Assad for me is kind of like every night since he's been on the Cubs, it's been like, good night, Javi. Good work. I'll most likely kill you in the morning. And keep him on. And he's the Dread Pirates Assad. And it's all good.
He's got a horse head in his bed the next morning. Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's, yeah, I've been happy with his consistency, but I think he's kind of the definition of a guy you love in the regular season. Don't necessarily love him with your postseason hopes on the line. But that's just kind of why things turn into a higher gear in the postseason. And I'm very curious to know what Assad would be like working out of the bullpen exclusively, because that was kind of the plan for
yes.
what he was going to be, like the swing guy, and they
yep.
just kept needing him in the starting rotation. So, but I think he could dial it up a little bit more than what he typically does when he's
could
a
be a middleman. Could be a great middleman if he wasn't used as much as he has been the last three
yeah,
years.
Yeah, that's basically
100%.
What happened to Colin Ray this season, right? Because Steele went down, Shota went down, Colin Ray stayed in the rotation, generally very effective, et cetera, et cetera. Javier Assad is a strange one. Like, he always gets the three ball counts. He doesn't seem to have like premium velocity, but somehow like he gets himself in trouble and he gets himself back out. Who knows how often that'll work for him? Sometimes that doesn't, and that's when you know he gives up like the three run bombs. But yeah, like that's what we've been seeing from Javier Assad, is just like consistently getting himself into and out of trouble and eating quality innings somehow. You can't explain it. You can't predict baseball, but it works. And I guess the Cubs like what they're seeing, and they keep giving him a chance. But the thing that I was more referring to was the fact that they option him off the major league roster, and yet he's staying with the team somehow. Or maybe he's in Iowa right now. I don't know if he's allowed in the dugout if he's been optioned. But like,
pretty sure he's in Iowa.
Yeah,
that's what I read earlier.
Yeah, at some point, like, he might come back, because again, like, September 1st is coming up, and maybe they decide, hey, you know, We're going to randomly put Drew Pomeranz on the injured list or something like that. And now you're back to give us like a six-man rotation or to take the spot of some other guy to give him extra rest or something to that effect. Like there are a lot of options that they have right now because they have a Javier Assa. And the mystery is why they brought up Jordan Wicks twice now, and he hasn't pitched. I don't think he's pitched for over a week, to be honest. And that's a little weird. So that's the one that I think they might have mismanaged, is like just yo-yoing Jordan Wicks back and forth between the rotation and being a long man and being a one-inning reliever, and then he gets injured and you got to ramp him back up. Like this is essentially a really stupid year for one Jordan Wicks, in my opinion.
With a 12-run lead today, why did they have him in? Didn't they have Wicks in instead of Ben Brown?
Nailed
Yeah,
it.
that would have
Yeah.
been the perfect
Skip.
point. That was
Or
Saturday,
yesterday.
but yeah, I thought that would have been a perfect time for Wicks, and they decided to use Brown instead of like saving Brown for like a bulk outing sometime later. But I assume there was a rationale for that, and I don't know if anybody actually asked Craig about that in post game or pre game, but
Yeah,
it's
I guess
Jordan
Wicks
Wicks
is
has
the
been
bulk arm if you're losing.
Yeah, I think Jordan Wicks had to like get out of jury duty or something, and they literally just brought him along on the road trip so that he wouldn't have to show up. And yeah, he's I don't know, he might be binge watching Game of Thrones like I am. So like I'm not sure it's a baseball move, and I don't know that Assad is going to throw a pitch in Iowa. It could, you know, they could have just brought Jordan Wicks onto the roster to give him an MRI and then put him back on the injured list so they can bring Assad back. I don't know. I just assume it's Jed proving that his extension was worth it.
Yeah, it's going to be very strange to see what they do with Wicks, but yeah, we're a month, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're essentially a month away from the end of the regular season. Month plus 1 week, 5 weeks. We are a week from September expansion, so you'll get probably Moises Ballesteros back. You might get, I guess Miguel Amaya won't be coming back until the very end of the regular season, and most likely for the postseason. You'll get one more pitcher. I don't know who that is going to be. That might just be Assad coming back for somebody else, but then they'd have to pick someone else. So we'll talk about that next time because, that is Labor Day and that's why we're doing this today. I also went to a Savannah Bananas game, but I think we got to bump that to next time because we've been going a while and I got to edit this stuff. But
You had a blast, didn't you, Ken?
I did. And I want to talk to you guys
Yes.
about that next time. But for this time, we are looking at a Giants series and then a series in Denver against the Rockies, and then they'll be back for Labor Day against the Atlanta Braves. And then they'll finally get an off day in the middle of that particular homestand. It gets like a little silly with the travel coming up because then they have to go randomly to Atlanta and they come right back to face the Rays, and then they're on the road again for a week before they finish the season at home. So it's kind of nice to be able to see finish the season at home. If they finish the season at home, they will be either hosting the top wild card series. We hope that they keep that spot, or there's a possibility they have a bye because they will have won the NL Central. And the math suggests that if they win the NL Central, they have that bye as one of the top two teams in the league. So here's hoping that happens. Yeah, any last words, guys?
I'm going to be at the Rocky series next weekend, so go Cubs. Don't blow
I hope they
it.
win.
Jeff, have a good time, and my closing statements are go Bears.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, the Bears are doing pretty well in preseason, it seems. So, yeah, good luck to
Hey,
everybody
we
who's a
went
Bears fan.
undefeated last year. What could go wrong this year? Yeah.
Well, there's a better coach and apparently a pretty good backup quarterback, at least.
100%. Well, oh God, don't get me started on that. But yes, our coach, 100%, absolutely backup.
And I think the starter is pretty good too, like just from what I've seen. So, yeah, it'll be a good football season. Until then, it's still baseball. We got 5 weeks of it. We want to thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Adam for hosting us again on your awesome Zoom. You can find us at obstructedview.net. Theme song is by Rich Deanna. And our final outcall from Hall of Famer Pat Hughes is from Randall Sanders, reminding us that the Cubs did, in fact, win the World Series not too long ago, and they might do it again. So rate us on Apple Podcasts, share us with your friends. And we'll see you next time.
Do
Go
not do
Cubs.
this to your friends.
It was more than just a game.
Did I lose you guys?
No, we're here. You always do such a good job of
Yeah.
transitioning us to the next stop that
No.
I think we're just waiting for that. I
Oh,
think we're
damn it.
all
Okay. Oh, I screwed up.
No, Ken,
No,
you did not screw up. We're just all so whelmed by the optimism of
no.
the last couple of weeks. It's not you, Ken, man. You're good. You're good.
Okay. So we were at the point where I remembered how to do math. Yeah. So
It was more than just a game.